Hey, good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM. And going over to our friends on Free FM 89.0, coming out of Hamilton, going throughout the Waikato. And beautiful stormy morning out there, isn't it? Windy and wet, and nice, good winter weather, I suppose you could say. Good soup and stew kind of weather, I guess. And today on the show, anyway, we're going to be joined in a little while by Murphy. Who is a permaculturalist out at Hākia these days. And that's probably not how you pronounce her name correctly, but anyway, we'll get to all of these things in a little while. Before that, though, we're going to do some primary sector headlines, have a look at some weather, do some look at some gardening to-dos, all coming up in the next hour or so. And, yes, hope you enjoy the show. And always get to get the, forgetting to, yes, and you may also be getting the show live streaming on Raglan Community Radio website. Or you may be listening to it on like a podcast thing like Spotify or something like that. Either way, hope you enjoy the show, and we'll start today's show. Well, this one by Dave Kilgore called Today's Gonna Be Mine. There we are, folks. That was David Kilgore there with Today Is Going To Be Mine. And now it's time for some primary sector headlines here on the Over the Fence show today. And biosecurity risks and opportunities have been identified in two-year megatrends report. Yes, indeed. New crops of soybeans, pineapples and rice could be grown in New Zealand as local climate change, a new report proposes. The Global Change in New Zealand Biosecurity Report stated other changes would also result, being an increased risk of plant-destroying insects, weeds and diseases entering the country. And this report was a culmination of a two-year government-funded research project to review how things called global megatrends could make it harder to stop plant pests and diseases entering Aotearoa. These trends include sea level rises, which force changes in shipping trade routes, extreme weather, human movement, and international conflict. And they're all likely to result in increased risk of entry to New Zealand by alien plant pests. And the project report leader, Nicholas Maurice, said, "Our main conclusion is that our systems need to remain agile. We need to maintain these things we do and do quite well. But consider the trends, one being climate change, but there are others." So it's an interesting report. I must dig into that one a bit deeper, actually, as time goes by, and see what else it says in that one. And the latest red meat export figures paint a grim picture for New Zealand farm gate profits. Exports in March dropped 4% to $1.1 billion from this time last year. The value of sheep, meat and beef have come down 8% off last year's high levels, with the industry citing global economic challenges behind 3 months of consecutive declines. And a Meat Industry Association Manager of Strategy and Advocacy, Jason Krupp, said the drop in export revenue will be felt on farm. And he adds, certainly prices coming down is going to have an impact on revenue. So there we are. And what else we have? Yes, there's a dive in log prices, making harvesting uneconomic. Yes, logging exporters are being blamed for the current dive in log prices to a level where harvesting is uneconomic. Between March and April, log prices dropped 14% from 112 and 115. Let me start again. Between March and April, log prices dropped 14% to $112, down from 115. Come in. I guess it's just right, folks. Just wandering in. That's an A-grade log, folks. And Laurie, forestry manager, Ella Laurie, said prices needed to be north of 120 to be economic for harvesters. All right, so there's it's interesting, that one. You know, there's so many pine forests in the country, right? And yeah, how they haven't figured it out. And of course, most of the timber mills and that are pretty much closed in New Zealand now. So yes, a lot of that could be done right here in Aotearoa, but it just doesn't seem to be these days. And so it goes. And Zespri are pleased with the new kiwifruit auction system. Top dollar continues to be paid for the right to grow gold kiwifruit here. And each year, Zespri release licenses to grow the fruit, and this year it ran in an ascending price open auction rather than a bid tendering system. And the new license release mechanism was established this year to provide greater price transparency. I mean, all growers paid the same price for licenses. And another change, Zespri also ran two different auctions for 350 hectares of Sun Gold on offer. So, yes, good on Zespri there, doing stuff there. All right, now I'm going to play for you a song by the Phoenix Foundation called Flock of Hearts off the Jules Holland Show, and we're back with some weather after this one.
Come a time when we won't have to worry. Every single day, and is it a crime? Oh no, no, no, no, no. To live inside every emotion in a single breath. The king, you're way out of line. Asleep at the wheel of fortune on your lucky day. In the palace of sound, I was trapped in a man's body. Child's mind.
Right, folks, that was Phoenix Foundation with Flock of Hearts there, playing in the Jules Holland Show about 3 years ago, something like that. And turning back the clock a bit more, I was up actually here. This is where I was on Saturday, where this concert was in 1983, Sweetwaters, and here's the Narcs, No Turning Back, with an intro by none other than Karen Hay herself.
Of 1982's top local bands will be entering this year with changed lineups and directions, and that's not such a bad thing. But let's get retrospective for one last time and head back to Pukekaua.
Hey you! Whoa, making some noise! Whoa! Thanks for listening to us. Got one more song to go, then the song is going to be on our mini album, so we'll No Turning Back. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Survive as a three-piece this year?
I think the Narcs
aren't looking for anything more than a three-piece.
All right, folks, here we are. That was the Narcs live from Sweetwater's in 1983 with Karen Hay introducing that one, of course. And now it's time for some weather here on the Over the Feet show, and some headlines for this week is unsettled weather, rain, thunder, hail, snow, and strong winds. Yes, indeed. Had a bit of all of that this morning, really. It's been, well, it didn't have any thunder or hail, but certainly been windy and stormy, for sure. And how was it about Phillips Road this morning?
Very rainy. It was like flooding everywhere, but not so much thunderstorms.
No? Windy?
Yeah, lots of wind. Wind and rain. It was actually a waterfall coming down from our roof, like kind of shocking. We were like, oh, front seat waterfall. Yeah.
Nice. That's our Phillips Road, folks, there, down by the beautiful Aotea Harbour. And what else are we going to bring you on the thing? Yes. Thunderstorms. Yeah, they're saying there might be a few around here in the Waikato, things like that. Maybe. I thought I heard some thunder over the mountain maybe earlier today, but I might have just been hearing things at the same time. And the national forecast today, well, it's kind of messy, and there's just rain coming and going, basically. And there's a change happening at the moment to a northeasterly airflow with a humid, warm weather we have had for a while. Ends today as the airflow changes to the southwest. Most regions will have rain or showers today as various troughs and fronts move through. What can we expect in the Waikato here? Well, showers. Northerly change, strong west to a southwest this morning. And late evening to overnight showers becoming heavy, perhaps some hail. And thunder Auckland southwards, yeah, doesn't really feel kind of, well, it's kind of warm, actually. It doesn't. So I'd say we get probably thunder as opposed to, like, hail. But, you know, I guess we'll see what the airflow change does. So here's, and locally, what can we expect here in beautiful Whangaroa? In the next week or so, I think it's about 16 degrees today, yes, the high. Tomorrow will be daytime high, these are 13 degrees, and then 15 degrees on Friday, and then 17 and 16 pretty solidly for the rest of the week. Nighttime temperatures, here we go, 9 degrees tonight. Tomorrow night, 3 degrees, and then a chilly old 1 degree Friday night. Then 4 degrees a Saturday night, and then between kind of like 6 and 8 or 9 for the rest of the week at night. So, yes. And why is it going to be so cold on Friday or Saturday? That's because it's going to be sunny, folks. Yes, the rain's going to, it's going to rain today. Then they're expecting thunderstorms tomorrow. And then Friday, Saturday, it's looking pretty sunny. And then Sunday, it's going to start clouding up a little bit. And then the rest of the week, they're not expecting any more rain till kind of like next Wednesday. So, some nice weather coming up. And the winds, yes, are very strong today. Westerlies of 33 k's. Drop down a bit to about 22 k's tomorrow, again from the west. Then south-south westerlies for the next few days from Friday through to Sunday. Then south-south westerlies Monday. Then moving southerly Tuesday and then northerly next Wednesday. So, yeah, chances of rain. There has been raining a lot already today. 7 mils they're expecting. I would have thought it would be more than that, to be honest. And 3.6 mils tomorrow, yeah, so probably a little bit more than that. And then might get a little bit of rain Sunday, possibly. And otherwise, might be chances of trace rain, but maybe not. And the sun rose this morning at 7.09 and will set at 5.26 this evening. And the length of visible light is 11 hours and 12 minutes. The actual day length is 10 hours and 16 minutes. Yeah, the days are certainly pretty short, all right. And tomorrow will be 1 minute and 49 seconds shorter than today. And it was full moon just the other day, so it's a waning gibbous moon at the moment. 73% illuminated. I haven't seen it for a few days. It's been too cloudy, but I have seen the light, but no, not actually the moon itself. And that will rise at 6 past 9 this evening. And we'll set at 11.50 tomorrow morning with the waning crescent coming up on the 13th of May. All right. That's the weather, and I'll come back with some gardening to-dos after this one here by Soaked Oats, called one of their latest ones called The Way It Works. Oh, there we are, folks. It was a new one there by Soaked Oats called The Way It Works. And now we're going to have a look at some Gardening by the Moon stuff. And today being the 10th, this is a good time to sow quick-growing root crops like radishes and turnips. And I'm going to bring in Murky, our guest today, now to talk about you. You're a Gardening by the Moon enthusiast.
Kia ora, I'm Marve. At the moment, it's after full moon, so the moon is going dark, and that makes a really good time to start sowing some root crops, meaning like carrots, radishes, anything that grows underground, as well as beetroots. They are really good for sowing at the moment as well.
Okay. Carrots?
Yeah, carrots are amazing. Definitely saw some.
All right, carrots as well. And as we go into the next week, in the last quarter, which starts Saturday, we've got here fruit trees and vines, and feed your citrus with some general fertilizer. What else would you add into that little segment of the moon?
I would say it's also a good time to start weeding the garden, because the weeds won't have as much energy to grow back. So get the weeding done now, so when it's new moon, you can just plant and enjoy the garden.
Sage advice. I like that. What else can you plant? Well, we'll start with these things here. Let's grab your pen and paper, folks. And we have Alyssum apples, apricot, blackberries, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, calendula, carrots, cauliflower, coriander, cyclamen, daffodil, daisy, delphinium, dianthus, feijoa, garlic, hyacinth, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, parsley, peas, pears, poppies, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, strawberries, sweet pea and tulip. Anything else to add to that?
I feel like that's covered pretty much everything, but maybe like broad beans.
Oh, yes.
I didn't see. Yeah, that's really good time to sow. They can be direct sowed to garden, and they'll be ready to be eaten in springtime.
What about your cover crop sort of things like lupins and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. For cover crops, yeah, lupins or just...
They go in they're right this time of year, you reckon?
Yeah, there's some autumn ones, but probably it's getting kind of lateish, because once the winter hits, the growth is quite slow. But if you have a bare block in your garden, definitely sow some cover crops. You can also sow cover crops with your veggies.
Okay, there we go. We're going to come back. We've got some Turkish music now. I'm not even going to try and pronounce this. And what do we have here?
It's called Erencan Gündüz. He's a young talent that's happening, that's coming up at the moment. And I love his songs because he's using a lot of instruments, like local instruments in his music. So I hope you enjoy it.
All right. What's the name of this track? How do you say that?
Bir günah gibi. It means like a sin.
Like a sin. Ooh, yeah. All right. All right, we're going to play this one, folks, and then we're going to come back and have a chat after this.
Thank you. ne diyarında beklediğim ne kaldı beni o gün senden kıskanan resimlerde sarardı bir günah gibi gizledim seni kimse görmedi seninle beni ağlarken için büyüldü gözlerim bir günah gibi gizledim o zaman
entertaining, wasn't it? Good song. Thank you for that one, Marve. And what's the guy's name again?
Evrenjan Gündüz.
Evrenjan Gündüz. Okay, cool. All right, folks, now we're going to be joined on Over the Fence here with our guest today. And I'm going to try and get this right. Marve Yeshilkash.
Yeshilka.
Yeshilka. Okay. And from Turkey.
Yeah, all the way from Turkey.
Yes. And tell us about Turkey. Where were you born in Turkey, say?
I was born in Black Sea region, which is like north of Turkey, on Black Sea, like the sea. But I was up in the mountains, so it's actually from a really small village, like quite rural village up in the mountains. And yeah, I grew up pretty much playing in nature. That was my whole childhood, and like making dams in the river, climbing to fruit trees, and stealing fruits from neighbors' gardens, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And later on...
So what sort of fruit do you grow up there? Or grows up there?
Like temperate ones, apples, like pears, peaches, grapes, even actually kiwi fruit in the recent years that I started growing in my hometown. What else? Cherries, all sorts of like blackberries, raspberries. Yeah, I would say very wide range of fruit. Nuts.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, my family had hazelnut farm, so they made their living mainly from hazelnuts. So it's like fields and fields of hazelnuts. And later on in my life, my family moved to a bigger city that was mainly for like education and job opportunities, but we always lived close to like the village where I was born. I have a background in science. I studied molecular biology and genetics. That was my passion, kind of understanding what's happening in the background of things, like in nature, in like smaller level, like molecular level. And yeah, I did quite a few like research projects around Europe, mainly on like cell biology, like really what happens in cellular level inside us, in our DNA and things like that.
And humans you're talking about?
I think I was more interested in humans than like plants, to be honest, at that stage, like humans, and particularly like, you know, when sperm and an egg come together, like at that stage the fertilized egg already knows which part is gonna be head, which part is gonna be the leg. So that really fascinated me, that knowledge that has like DNA, the knowledge DNA has, and as soon as there's a fertilized egg that's gonna be a human, it knows everything already. It knows what it's supposed to do.
That's interesting.
And from there, I ended up in New Zealand, and here I am.
And so, how long ago did you come over here to beautiful Aotearoa?
6 years now.
Okay.
Yeah, 6 years ago, and that has been a journey, to be honest. Yeah, lots of things going on. And New Zealand, when I came to New Zealand, I had this silly expectation that New Zealand is going to be exactly like Europe, or I lived in Scotland, so I expected a little bit like English, Scottish culture.
Kind of is, sort of.
But nah, I think it's a lot more like island vibes. To be honest, when I came here, it was a little bit shocking to me how relaxed people are. Because, in Turkey and in Europe, everyone is just very, I don't know, different vibe. So I that. And when people ask me, what do you like about New Zealand? That's definitely laid back, relaxed culture.
I've heard that from a few people who come over here. Yeah, so that sort of vibe. I suppose, because I've grown up with it, I'm just kind of used to it, I suppose. But most people do seem relaxed and chilled out, which is great. I feel like.
And also, like, everyone is like, oh, like, it's your life. Like, whatever. You live your life. I really like that as well. Again, it's cultural difference. In Turkey, people are very, this is very positive. People look after each other, like, quite an intense way. But also on the negative side, like, everyone is, like, very nosy and want to know what's going on in your life. In New Zealand, I like that it's a bit, it's as much as you share, not like everyone has to know everything, you know. It's a cool part of it.
So what drew you here in the first place, do you think? Do you remember?
I do remember, my ex, I met with him in Scotland, and he's a Kiwi. And he was telling me lots about New Zealand, and he was actually kind of obsessed with New Zealand. And I was like, oh my God, like, what is this country? I knew New Zealand existed in somewhere in the world, but I didn't know where it is. And I remember he was telling me, like, oh, didn't you recognize the silver fern? But I was like, what's the silver? I had just no idea, but he told me a lot. And yeah, I wanted to come visit him, but also I wanted to come see this beautiful country, obviously from Lord of the Rings. And there was just like a big, like, what a beautiful country. Yeah, but it was like nothing what I expected, in a positive way. I think it's a lot, it's so much more than that.
Cool. All right, so when you first came over here, were you thinking to yourself, oh, well, I'll see if I can get a job in science doing molecular biology or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when I came here, it was like a little bit, I'm just going to like live here for a bit and see how it goes. And then soon after that, I decided I want a job in my field. And I really enjoy like science and research. So that was like big passion at the moment. And I couldn't get a job in science, but I got a job actually in Raglan Area School as well as Teuku School. So I was doing like a science clubs and working with kids. That was like my initial work, which I enjoyed lots. And then I started working in Hamilton in a more commercial lab, doing mainly like chemistry and different fields of science, I would say. Yeah.
All right. And so you did that for a little while, and somewhere along the lines you ran into permaculture. And do you remember how that happened?
Yeah. So when I came to New Zealand, it was a little bit surprising to me to see how like people grow so much food. Like, again, I'll use Europe or Turkey as an example. Like, no one really grows tomatoes in their backyards in big cities. Like, or I didn't really experience that until I came to New Zealand. And yeah, I just met with so many gardeners, and yeah, that was like around me already. But I was also going through a little bit hard period, like mentally, and it helped me to be in the garden and like just work with the soil. Like that was like working with myself. But I think the peaking point was that, like, yeah, I wanted to have a garden that's like really self-sufficient, and I don't have to work as much because I had a full-time job in Hamilton. And during that period, I was on like a crop swap. This is like a event happening in Raglan. You can swap like your garden related anything. And
yes,
I went to someone's house to swap some eggs for veggie seedlings, and when I saw their like garden, I was like, oh my god, like this is what I want. And she's like, yeah, she's really experienced in permaculture. She started telling me about. And from that, I got a scholarship to do a permaculture design course. And I think it was so meant to be. I was suddenly in the middle of it. And for me, I like had this understanding it's going to be so much about like gardening and what happens in the garden. But it's so much more than that. So it's now a little bit I'm like trying to open that to people and see like how it has so much more to offer, obviously, on top of gardening. Yeah.
You're talking about in the social kind of realm as well, and things like that, behavioral realm and things like that.
Yeah, it's like initially like permaculture was created to apply as like as an alternative way to agriculture, like the agriculture we know. But as the years went by, like those principles, because the permaculture principles are like adapted from nature, so that like what happens in nature, they just boil them down to some principles as well as like indigenous wisdom all around the world. So it's a knowledge that already existed. And yeah, they were using this as to create this sustainable agriculture. But later on, it just became in a way that it can be applied to other like behavioral, economical, political like areas. So it's really wherever you want to apply it, it's very flexible.
Okay. And so how long have you been out at Hākia, Phillips Road out there?
6 years. That's like six the years. First place I came and stayed. Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I've been there 6 years. And, well, initially, this is like a little bit, I guess, like for me, emotional like topic, because I feel like the land has taught me so much and has been part of my journey in like a massive way. Yeah, I come from a like really small village where my family grew like literally 90% of their food, like, and they made everything like cheese, butter, and that was their living. But along the way, I did the normal things. I moved to a city, I studied, like I was a city girl. And I think when I came back and started living at Hākia, it just really made me, and also in combination with Māori culture, I feel like I have to mention this, like the concept of whakapapa, like where we come from, where are our roots, like that, and being on the land of Hākia, like it really made me connect to my childhood and made me understand like how important to have that, like as a child growing up in nature and picking a fruit from a tree and yeah, like growing with, playing with nature. So yeah. That's pretty much it.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
And so, okay, you've been out there, what, did you say 6 years, eh? Out there.
Yeah.
Okay. And was it always like a permaculture garden, or has it, you've just kind of developed that? Was it you and Dan, you were saying?
Yeah.
Have you developed that only recently, or was it always kind of that way?
I would say, because as we said, like the permaculture principles are, it's a knowledge that already existed, but permaculture is more like an umbrella term that brings them together. But the farm was a family farm, and it was used for cattle and sheep. So I wouldn't say in that sense, like it really used those like working with nature kind of principles, but it had a lot of like recycled materials. Shout out to Dave, like Dave and his friends, like they used so much like recycled materials, and they came up with really, yeah, like really funny solutions, which was inspiration to me and Dan. Like when we looked at their work, we were like, oh, like they didn't have any money, but they really made the best of the resources they got. So that part, I would say, very permaculture like thinking. And what we added, like, I am passionate about, like, yeah, creating those like food forests and creating those invisible structures that like connects everything together. And Dan is very passionate about infrastructure, so he's always like trying to create that like infrastructure that will last very long time. And one of the principles in permaculture is actually about like making things last for seven generations. And that's like really concept, like creating things that's regenerating in a way that, yeah, they'll be there generation after generation for a very long time. Yeah.
It's a good way to think about things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Seven generations, it seems like a long, long time, but it's a great way to approach things.
Yeah, for sure.
Thinking, you know, long term and stuff like that. And
There's like a major things about like this long term thinking. Like when we look at the modern society we have, there's very high supply of everything. Like we are a little bit disconnected from where things come from, or how much it costs to get this, or like what's the work involved. And it's like now, like the research is showing that made us lose our ability to think long term, plan for long term, and actually look after ourselves in that sense. So we really lost the abilities to, I will use this word, survive, because like if something happens, we have like this comfort of, oh, I'll just go to the supermarket to buy the apple, but it might not be there.
Yeah. It's interesting that, yes. I've never actually heard that bit of research before, but yeah, right. It's sort of affecting us on a psychological level there.
Yeah.
It's just like, instead of like planning long term, everyone's just like, oh, well, you know, I'll go to the supermarket next week or whatever. And
Yeah. And that's another part I like about permaculture. It's actually looking a lot into like what's happening in modern society. These are, we already know, like we are losing the sense of community, and that's affecting people. Like there's really high rate of depression, and yeah, even like people, like they're always, even though we have social media that connects us together, like
not always
all across the world, like there's this high, like people are feeling lonely. And yeah, like all this principles on permaculture, they look into pre-industrial societies, because they made things as well, right? And like some of the things we see, like Rome Empire, we see their like cities that's still standing up, and you could actually run it and use their like water systems and everything. So it's a little bit the same, like taking those same logic, what happened since we started like getting these fossil fuels out, and like life kind of jump started, or like we jumped into another level of being, like we're just consuming these fossil fuels that Earth made over billion and billion years. And now there's this big fear around, like they're going to run out. What's our plan B? Like we have to come up with something, electric cars, like wind power, sun power. Like, yeah. So it's permaculture is like an alternative way. Like what can we actually do about this? And also recognizing the problems out there, but focusing on the solution. Yeah.
I love that. They just dwell on the problems, right? It's solution focused, you know, which is a very healthy way to look at anything, really. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, this and that's happened, but oh, well, you know, something good might come out of it, you know, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, whatever, you know.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot about like our perspective. Like when we change the way we look at things, often the answer is right there, right? Like even when there's a problem, like we just have to change. Like where is this coming from? And we won't gain anything if we just keep dwelling on the problem. We have to take the action. That's I feel that's all life about. We have to take the action and make it better for ourselves. And like it, that's like the first stage. Like if we make the changes in a personal level, and then it's gonna be like in our fun, our family, and then from there, like our wider community, and slowly, it will make its way to global stage, and then we can make a big shift. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
and on that topic, I think like when I was growing up, I had this really big anxiety around like what's going to happen to Earth. Like we're ruining the Earth. There's so much pollution. And I was like, oh, like I really felt like we fucked up. Like it was really stressing me. I was like, there's no way going back. Like it's really like, yeah, it was quite stressful for me. But then like this perspective of like, yeah, problem can be the solution. Like we can make a change. It's not all like dark and gloom, and like it's not that. Like we can actually take some actions and make a positive change. It's just up to us to do that and doing it together as well. Like we are stronger together.
For sure. Yeah, community is a big one. And yeah, interconnectedness. And I guess, you know, this is the sort of lines back up with all your molecular biology sort of stuff in a funny kind of way, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I suppose, you know,
exactly.
Discuss with that, and you know, it all makes all these small things make the one big whole and all that, right?
Yeah, I really like that you connected back to for sure, because what is like in molecular level is also in a bigger level as well. Like it's all connected, but it's also like full of the similar patterns, right? Like if we understand those patterns, we can actually use those patterns for our own benefit. And I mean, that's amazing.
And you had a thing out at Hākia on Saturday just gone. How did that go?
We had an introduction to permaculture course, and that was funded by Raglan Food Co., Raglan Coconut Factory. Big shout out to them for...
Good on your Raglan Food Co.
Yeah, thanks for supporting this, because we... I guess like Dan and I had this vision when Hākia was becoming what it is right now, to create a space for transformation and connection to land. And from that, like slowly it became this community, like, yeah, community focused action. And we wanted to like share knowledge that's out there with people, to upskill people and bring people together and connect to people. So from that, like Raglan Food Co. funded us to run this course, Introduction to Permaculture, and it was an amazing day. We started with some theory on these permaculture principles and looked at like living examples on the land, like how we applied these principles to like our farm, as well as like to ourselves, like some examples of invisible structures. It means like things we don't really see but still affects our life, like economy or like our relationship with other people. We had a lovely lunch made by Holly. She's a chef, and she also used all the food that was grown in the garden. There was this like magical stuffed pumpkin. I can't still get over it. It looks so good, like massive, like stuffed with all these grains, and just really beautiful. And then later we had a session with Georgianne, who did Indigenous Wisdom, and she talked lots about Maori way of connecting to land and some of like their values and how we can integrate those values into our lives, which I think is really important part of everything permaculture and living on Aotearoa. Like we have to connect to this wisdom. They've been on the land for a very long time. They observed and understand what's happening on this land. So there's like a big wisdom to unlock there. And I feel like she delivered it really well. So it was an amazing day overall. And
great. Oh, well, good on you for bringing it all together. Sounds like a good day. Very informative and interesting and tasty day, well, sounds like.
Yeah, it was. For sure. Yeah, it was an amazing day. And yeah, if anyone is interested, like, get in touch. We, like, created a waiting list because there was so much interest in that. And that's another, like, amazing part, like, seeing people, like, coming together. Like, in the beginning of the course, we had, like, little circle and talked why we are here. And to me, that's always, like, the amazing part. Like, yeah, like, some people are there to learn about gardens, and some people are really scared for, like, future and what's going to happen to their kids. And so people come from all different backgrounds, but this is a place, like, we can be together and, yeah, like, bounce off from each other. Like, it was really, like, people had so much to share as well. Like, yeah, it always amazes me, like, being around people, how much we learn. Yeah,
quite right. Mm. And you're also involved with PINS now, the Permaculture Institute of New Zealand. I got their newsletter just a couple of days ago, and there you were writing a piece about one of the principles, wasn't it?
Permaculture
principles, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got nominated to be on the council, I think it was like last year, November. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been like working on hard. So everyone on the council is like new except Fiona, she's the chair. Yeah, we're working really hard to bring a new face to PINS. Like, it has been a little bit dormant and lots of things going in the background, but we wanna, because the goal of PINS permaculture in New Zealand is to promote permaculture and develop permaculture and, like, yeah, help people in that sense. So I took on the newsletter. I have a little passion for writing and like poems and things like that, so I thought that's like the best area I could actually contribute, and it has been going well. I just came up with this idea. I was reading actually David Holmgren's A Sense of Permaculture book, and I had to come up with a plan, like what I need to write for newsletter. And to me, that was like made so much sense, just going back to the principles and sharing it with people to understand what is this principles we are talking about. And then the first principle is actually observe and interact. And that's like the biggest reminder to us, like, before we like react or before we take an action, we have to step back and observe, like, what's happening around me, like, what's happening in me, like, really understand and take the action from that place. Mm, yeah.
Mm. And you can apply that to, you know, all over life, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just flying off the handle at something, and just sit back and, okay,
Yeah. And that's why I like all these principles. Like, sometimes yeah, sometimes it's hard to understand how they can be applied to our personal levels, but this kind of like this principle is a good example of it. Like, it can be applied to any place, even in a, like a business model. Like, you're not supposed to, like, let's say, start printing like this or that. Like, your first stage is actually observe, like, who's your client, like, what they want, like, understanding what's happening there and taking action, like, as a response to that. So I really love, like, each principles, how they are applicable to all areas of life. And that's why I think, like, permaculture is amazing resource for all of us that we can use to create, like, sustainable life. And not only in the sense of, like, having this agriculture that's not destroying the land, but also having a sustainable life within ourselves. Like, what's happening? Like, how we can nourish ourselves, how we can develop ourselves. Yeah.
Great thoughts. I like that.
Thanks. Yeah. For sure.
All right. So if anyone wants to get hold of the PINS, like, newsletter, or can they just, like, send an email somewhere and start getting the material like that?
You can be member to PINS Permaculture in New Zealand. So if you go to Permaculture New Zealand website, you can be member. There's a sliding scale of payments as well, so you can choose what you can afford, and you will see the news. You will receive the newsletters as well as on Facebook, social media. You can follow Permaculture in New Zealand, and they get to share to there as well.
All right.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to come check out what you're doing over at Hākia, how do folks go about that?
So for Hākia, again, we have a website, hākiaretreat.com, or you can go to social media, Facebook or Instagram as Hākia Permaculture, and we are there. yeah, just follow us and stay in touch. If you have any questions, we are always happy to answer people's questions. And we have more courses and little events lined up for the rest of the year. So just put your name down to be on the waiting list and we will be in touch for more with you. Yeah.
Sounds great. We better wrap up the show. That's what we better do. Thank you very much for coming to Marvo. I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Greg.
Really interesting chat. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. And we might even get back in again another day. How does that sound?
Yeah. Should we do more? I'm keen.
Okay. All right. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it, folks. That'll do for the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again for Marvo for coming in. And yes, we'll see you again next week. All going well. And have a lovely day out there, folks. And take it easy. Actually, what's the Turkish kind of way to say something like take it easy or see you later or something like that? Or have a great week or something like that.
İyi haftalar.
İyi haftalar.
Yeah.
Yeah? What does that mean?
It's like have a good week. I can't come out. I feel like, oh my God, I don't know what.
All right, let it loop. İyi haftalar, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Kakite.